I could throw harder than anybody. Yes, I didn't know where it was going, but I could throw harder than anybody. And once I got a little older and figured out kind of where it was going, I still would like to call myself effectively wild. All right.
Wow, that was a much better.
I'm a softball player.
That was a much better high five than that guy.
I play softball. That's one thing I do. I'm a crisp high fiver.
You're a lefty though, right?
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's impressive. I'm actually going to get into that later in the interview.
Okay.
Unrelated to high fives.
All right. I do like high fives if you want to talk about it. Okay.
Perfect.
Fair enough.
We'll break it down later. So, Paul Wenzel and Charlie Performance. We are back at track. We actually never left, but you guys don't have to know that. We are here with Lauren Bay Regula of Track Athletics.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good seeing you again.
Good to see you again as well.
Yeah, the last couple hours. If you missed our first episode of Track, make sure to check out the interview we did with your husband, Dave Regula, that would have aired a week ago.
Yep.
Before we get everything that's awesome about you and specifically your journey, make sure to check out uncharterperformance.com if you dig the interview with Lauren or the one we did with Dave. Please leave us a 5-star rating and a kind review if you don't like me or if you don't like Lauren.
just blame Lauren or Dave. Actually, that's, you know what? That's a better thing. Blame Dave.
Yeah. You guys can steal that and just use it. If something goes wrong, just hashtag blame Dave. Track Athletics. No, but please leave us some constructive criticism. We would love to find out how we can improve. Also, please check out our affiliate links with Rogue Fitness. If you're on the website, you can probably see it there. And some of the cool products that we dig or we recommend below. All right. That's my spiel. Into Lauren. You are a 2-time Olympian.
Yep.
Besides me, married to Dave.
To someone who's been to the Olympics?
Yeah, exactly.
He counts.
You are a two-time Olympian for Canada, Team Canada.
Correct.
In softball.
Yep.
Formerly All-American, Division I, NCAA, Oklahoma State.
Yep.
You are the mother of three.
Yes, I am.
You recently unretired. Something that Dave kind of hinted on in our interview with him.
Yep.
But before we get into why you unretired, when did you retire?
After the 2008 Olympics, I hung them up. I had played for quite a while. I went to Athens in 2004, Beijing in 2008. Dave and I got married in 2007. And we were starting a family no matter what, but softball was taken out of the Olympics in 2012. So that was a pretty good ending point for me because the next few years would have, the year after the Olympics is generally a down year for softball. And so it was a perfect time for me to end.
Okay.
So I was 27. Yeah.
Okay. So that's a young time to retire.
Yeah, it is. It's funny. I talked to my Canadian coach actually about this when I had spoken to him this past year. It is early. Women tend to retire a little bit earlier. With guys, when you have children, nothing much changes. And so I think a lot of times family, you know, pulls you into that direction. So, I'm much younger than my husband and, we knew that if we were going to have children, that it was going to be relatively quickly. So once the 08 games were done, I mean, Grace was welcomed almost a year identically to when they were over.
Okay. And it was a mutual decision to start a family. Hey.
Yeah. We both knew
heading in that direction.
Yeah. When we got married, it was one of those things where, he knew I played softball. He chased me around for a couple years playing. And we had a plan, you know, he knew I wanted to play in 2008. So once basically that was over, like we had a plan, like this is where it's going to be. This is where it's going to end for me for softball. And then, you know, it's family time. And I was obviously so excited. I couldn't wait to have a family as well. So, yeah, we were definitely on our, on our path.
You mentioned he was chasing you around, so I like to think of how did you guys meet? I forgot to ask.
Dave, we met in I say a bar. He doesn't love the word bar. In a club. We met in a club in Chicago. So I actually played in the professional league for softball. I played for the Chicago Bandits.
Yes.
And I was just out one night and I got a little tap on the shoulder, and that's how we originally met.
He's like, I heard you play softball.
Nope, not at all. I actually vaguely remember. I do remember him asking where I was from, and I just pointed, being north. I'm like, I'm from Canada. We'll talk about it later.
All right, so awful segue by me. I apologize.
Sorry.
Why did you unretire? How long were you away from the game?
Okay, so it was 8 years.
Okay.
Yep, 2008 was my last time playing. And through the years, I was very fortunate to have remained in at least spurts of communication with the Canadian Softball Canada. And they had asked me a couple of times, but we had 3 children in 3 years. So between being pregnant or nursing or having little ones around, there was never a good time. But Coach Smith had called a couple of times and asked if I, you know, would consider coming back. And I got this email out of the blue. Very, you know, it was March of this previous year, 2016. And I laughed when I first got it, right? Uh-huh. Clearly, I didn't think so. After talking with Dave, you probably understand that he's just like a do it, we'll figure it out later.
Yeah.
So I got the email, I laughed. We were actually sitting here at track, and I had my phone out ready to text him or message him back and email him back and say, you know, thanks very much, but clearly I can't play. I mean, you name an excuse, and I had one. I was like, I haven't played for 8 years, which is, I think, is a pretty decent, you know, thing to go through your mind. I think at one point I was like, Dave, I don't even have cleats. And he's like, oh, that's too bad. I don't think they make cleats anymore. Yeah, you're right. You probably shouldn't play. I had every excuse as to not do it. I had family. How am I going to, we have a brand new business. And he asked me to sleep on it. And I did. Still thinking I was going to say no. And then the more I thought about it, I really did end on not a great note, losing, you know, an Olympic medal. And the more I thought about it, I just thought, well, the expectations are pretty low. I haven't played for so long. I don't think they're expecting me to go out there. And that took a little bit of pressure off. And then I just went, you know, it's exactly what we built the gym on. Just take chances. What's the worst that can happen? I definitely didn't want to look back when I was 40 or anything like that and say, man, I wonder what would have happened if I played. So I just kind of closed my eyes and jumped in.
Awesome. When were Worlds? So you got the email in March?
So I got the email in March. I officially said I was going to play, I think, the middle of March. And then we were going on vacation. So it wasn't until, because that was already had planned. A friend was supposed to get married. And so I was supposed to go on vacation, which we went. And I didn't really even start practicing till April. And I had to be with the team in June. I had 10 weeks.
Okay.
After 8 years.
So how do you get ready in 10 weeks?
That's a great question. I don't know. I guess just, it really truly was, I fitted in when I could. My body hadn't played for so long. It wasn't like I could even throw day after day after day after day. I mean, I could throw, take a few days off, throw a few days off just because my body had to get used to throwing again. I went through all the aches and pains. I mean, my side was all bruised up because usually when I was playing, it was calloused enough. So if I hit it, it didn't bother me. Well, I mean, I had like welts on my hip and I was wearing all these, like trying whatever I could to get in there so I could keep practicing. But it hit a point where I would get out there when I could. I was very clear. And I think that was a hesitation I had with playing was I'm like, you know what, coach, I have 3 children, a brand new business. I don't know exactly what I can give. And he was very, it was very comforting because he just said, give whatever you can. So I just came out whenever I could. I had my sturdy old catcher. Poor Dave had to come out of retirement. You should actually have asked him about coming out of retirement from catching. That was probably more interesting than me throwing. And then we had a girl who was an alternate on the Canadian team who actually lives not far from here. So she would actually come up, Vic Rumpf, she came up and caught for me a few times.
Okay.
So, I mean, it really was just a hodgepodge. And when June came, I just showed up at camp and said, you know, I did what I could.
That's awesome. And I'm not going to pretend to know anything about softball. I'm just going to preface the rest of the interview that this is as green as the turf that we are standing on is the topic of softball to me. So I apologize for my ignorance. How many games did you guys play at Worlds and how many did you pitch in?
Oh my gosh. That's a great question. How many games did we play?
How many pitchers were on the team?
So we had four.
Okay.
Five.
Including yourself.
Including myself. We had five. And then what happened was we lost one. One had to leave halfway through, well, at the end part of Worlds. So we ended up with four. And Worlds, it was basically a game a day, and there was probably 8 days. I can't even remember. It really is a blur. But I threw a little more than I thought I would, to be honest.
That was my next question. How much did you throw?
So, I was like the granny of the team, right? I mean, these poor kids, I had a conversation with the girl. Her name's Emma. First of all, her name's Emma. That name didn't become popular till way past my age group. And we were talking and I just looked at her one day and she's still in college. Uh-huh. And I just go, Emma, where were you in 2003? How old were you? And she was like, I was 7. And I was like, okay, because I had graduated college at that point. So I'm with these kids.
So what was the age difference between you and the next oldest member of the team?
Rafter, our catcher, who played. There was three. There was myself, Kaylee Rafter, Jen Salling. There was a few people who played on the 08 team.
Okay.
And so Kaylee Rafter, our catcher, she was oh, gosh.
So there were some veterans,
so to speak. Yeah, she's 30.
I'm making you sound like you're like.
No, I'm really extinct. Old. I totally. Well, compared to that, I had three kids and they were like, what is going on? So anyways, I definitely got a little bit of granny treatment as far as throwing. I mean, I could throw only a couple innings because no matter how much you practice, nothing with adrenaline and the stops and starts of innings, nothing can really prepare you unless you're actually playing games. So I could come out here and throw 75 pitches. Well, that's a completely different 75 pitches than if I'm in a game and you have to do the stop. And then obviously when our team's up, wait, and then get back out there. I mean, there was times where I was going to rewarm up and I thought, oh my gosh, I don't think my arm's going to go in a circle anymore. So I definitely got a lot of leeway in terms of, I definitely got the, okay, you know, Lauren's going to go throw. Okay, now she needs to stop. Where all these like young kids are just going like millions of pitches in a row. So after that first stint with the team, I got a little bit of time off to let my arm heal. And then once Worlds came, I was very fortunate. I threw a couple of must-win games. So it was pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, threw the bronze medal game. So that was a
win. How was the experience overall?
Unbelievable. I mean, I can't tell you that whole feeling of saying if I look back, I wonder if I'm going to regret it. I mean, the team was great. All got along, very cohesive. I'd lost the bronze medal in 2008. I got my bronze medal, in 2016. Congrats. Thank you. And honestly, just being able to be back on a team, I mean, what are the chances of 35-year-old mom of three gets an opportunity to go back to the world championships? I mean, we went to Japan and just being on a bus again with teammates. And I mean, I can't even describe to you how amazing it was.
So you made the right decision.
100%. All right. I mean, 100,000,000%.
So lesson learned, don't always trust your initial gut feeling.
I think sleep on it. Yeah. Exactly. sleep on it is very good advice.
All right. Perfect. So let's take it back. So that was the more recent experience with softball, but you didn't start. I'm sorry. You started at a very young age. If I'm correct, you started at 12.
Mm-hmm, playing. Okay.
Why'd you pick up softball and why so early?
So I am from a really small town. The TR in track is actually for trail. I'm from a little town called Trail, British Columbia.
And the AK is
for AK is for Akron. And it's a mountain town in BC. There's not a whole lot to do but sports. And I mean, you name a sport and I played it. So I didn't think I was going to go anywhere in softball, but I did, you know, track. I did gymnastics. I curled. I was even on the curling team. And
a more stereotypical Canadian sport.
You could say that. Yeah, right? Totally. Dave's like, God, I know I'd be good at curling just by watching it. Basketball, volleyball, softball. I skied in the winters. We went, you know, water skied and did stuff in the summer.
So you did everything.
Literally everything. It wasn't softball. Okay. Like I wasn't drawn to softball because it was softball. There is nothing else to do. It's a very sports town, sports oriented town. So it was not my favorite sport. I loved it, but I loved volleyball and I loved gymnastics. So I thought I was going to the Olympics when I was like 8, but I didn't think it was going to be in softball. I thought for sure I was going to be a gymnast, and that did not pan out very well. So my next love went to volleyball, and I just, I played every sport, every different season, and volleyball season was over. So I went on to the next one, and then basketball season over. So I went on to softball. And as I got a little bit older, it was just starting to become more and more apparent that I had some skill sets in softball that other kids didn't have.
Okay.
And then that's kind of how it guided me. And I ended up, I love the sport. But I love a lot of sports.
Do you remember what those specific skill sets were that kind of led you to softball?
I could throw harder than anybody. Yes, I didn't know where it was going, but I could throw harder than anybody. And once I got a little older and figured out kind of where it was going, I still would like to call myself effectively wild, which means the batters don't necessarily dig in because I sometimes could miss a pitch here or there. But I was, from a younger age, I was able to throw the ball hard enough to get our teams by a lot of other teams.
Okay. Do you think any of the other sports that you participated in transferred into your ability to throw hard?
100%. Okay. Like more percent than I think is possible. Yes.
Okay. Anything specifically that comes to mind?
Yeah. I mean, volleyball is explosion and jumping. Basketball is same thing. Explosion, jumping, lateral movement. Because I didn't just pitch. I also hit and I played outfield. Okay. And, you know, diving. I mean, just fear. Like, honestly, from a mental point, like fearlessness. From like skiing. I mean, I would bomb. I mean, bomb down the slopes. Like, I like that challenge. But track, same thing. I mean, gymnastics, I will, you know, we have our kids in gymnastics right now. I will never force them to do any sports. They love it. But just for overall body coordination, like if a coach came up to me and said, hey, you're stepping a little bit off of your power line to the right, I had the body awareness just from gymnastics to kind of fix my own body. So I think it's super important.
All right. So take it from an Olympian if you're watching or listening. Don't get stuck on one sport, you know, at the age of 10.
Exactly.
Make sure you get some general physical preparedness.
Right.
From a variety of sports.
100%.
When do you think, or when did you get serious about softball? Because you went to Oklahoma State.
Yes.
To D1 school, which is obviously a great accomplishment in itself. Because obviously the higher levels, it kind of trickles down.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you're not the best. Everyone's the best that was on their club team anymore. So when I was 16, I'm not kidding when I say our town is small, it's small. And it's not like it's small and then 20 minutes away is Cleveland or even Akron. I mean, it's 7,000 people. The closest city that has 100,000 more is like 3 hours away. So middle of nowhere. And we ran out of kids and we didn't really have a team to play. We couldn't wrangle enough people that wanted to play. So I knew there was a team called the White Rock Renegades. They were out of Vancouver and they had asked me if I'd like to be on their team. And that was known as if you're asked to be on this team, that was known as the team. Okay. And it was a really big accomplishment for me because my home team as a White Rock Renegade, when I said yes, was 8 hours away. So my dad would literally pack me up and my mom on the weekends. We'd drive 8 hours for a home game. I'd play Saturday. My coach would give me the early game on Sunday, and then we would drive back 8 hours. Well, my dad would drive. I would sleep. But at that point, I knew, okay, if the Renegades are asking me to play, like there must be something.
Okay. So were you approached by Oklahoma State? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was lucky. I was lucky in the recruiting process.
My question is, how did you get out of the little town?
My little town?
Yeah.
I sent videotapes to Division 1, 2, 3, you know, and junior colleges. I sent them everywhere. So I was really fortunate with the recruiting. I got to take all my 5 visits that the schools brought me down to. And it just felt like home, actually, at Oklahoma State.
So you were proactively engaged in pursuing your success.
Absolutely, yeah. You name it, yeah.
Based on, obviously, your experience in Canada, you're like, hey, I'm pretty good. I can take this somewhere, right?
Yeah, and it's funny. I didn't know if I could We went to one tournament in Colorado.
Okay.
And I remember my dad walking up to a coach and said, "Do you think this girl could play at Division One?" Uh-huh. And it was like kind of a little chuckle and yeah. And after that, I was like, "Oh, well, I guess I'll throw out some tapes."
But again, kind of going back to, you know, our previous conversation, you don't know what's going to happen if you don't.
Yeah, no try. Idea. Exactly. Okay. Yep.
How was your experience at Oklahoma State?
Awesome. It was awesome. Great. Yeah. Okay. There was a lot of ups and downs. Uh-huh. I think I wouldn't be for sure the player that I was, or the person that I was without them though. I mean, there was a lot of trial and tribulations. I had a really rough couple first years.
What do you mean by rough?
I was horrible.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
How bad is horrible?
Oh, just not very good. I mean, I would.
How do you go? Because next question is going to be, how do you go from horrible to Olympian? But
no. So what happened in a nutshell is I never had a pitching coach. So I was pretty raw when I went to Oklahoma State. So again, I'm not kidding. Our town's small. No pitching. I mean, I had a few people help me here and there, but I didn't have a dedicated person who, like, I kind of just figured it out. I definitely had, you know, someone showed me how to do the backdoor changeup, which was a great pitch of mine. I had people help along the way, but I was a pretty raw pitcher. And so I took a lot of instruction from our coaches. And just like Dave was saying about the millipede, paralysis by analysis. Someone would say something and I'm like, oh, this is a Division I coach. I have to do it exactly as they say. And I just locked up. I mean, I didn't throw nearly as hard as I could. My pitches weren't moving. My changeup was horrible. And I feel like I overtried, because it was really the first time I felt like I had like a professional helping me. And in my junior year, so that was my first 2 years. And in my junior year, there was a little bit of a shift and they kind of just left me alone.
Okay.
And once I was left alone and they gave me tips, but I think they learned that I take things very literally. My husband can tell you that I take things extremely literally. So I think they kind of figured out like, okay, just let her be and then just give her like a tidbit here and there. And from that junior year on, I kind of found my stride.
Okay. When did the Olympics become something that you started thinking about or you were approached?
I had thought about them, to tell you the truth, in 1999, but I was really young. But I knew...
How old were you?
I was still in college. Okay. How was I in 99? 18. Math is not my strong suit. I was 18. And I knew at that point my skill set...
Was that when you knew that you're going to go to the Olympics for softball?
I knew that I could because I knew how I was throwing at 18 and I thought, okay, I can see these, like, I think I'll be okay.
Okay. So how did you make the Olympic team? Why you?
Why me? Well, I was invited to the Olympic tryouts.
Okay.
And, I was good at what I did. I was a good pitcher. And it's hard for me to say that because I'm so Canadian. But I threw well. I had a good mentality for pitching. I was playing Division I, where I played in the Big 12, a really tough conference. Mm-hmm. And I was a good pitcher.
Okay. What separated you? So I'm going to place that in a different way. What separated you from the people that didn't make it?
Well,
besides being very good, because there's a lot of people that can
say they're very good.
They're very good.
And
they pitch very well. And they pitch fast. And they have a great changeup. What separated you?
Well, I had a very good mental game.
Okay.
There's good pitchers. Uh-huh. There are a lot of good pitchers out there. And there are just some pitchers, and I can name a handful of them, but there are just some pitchers whose balls move just a little bit differently or have just that different edge for whatever reason. I did throw the ball hard at the time, way back when. I was one of the hardest throwers in the world with a really good changeup. and honestly, that's what got me noticed. It was like I threw hard and I had a really good changeup. But if you're going to take a bunch of people... and you're going to put me up against a lot of pitchers that are very good. mentally, I could hang mentally. Like, I didn't have the meltdowns that, and you're the one with the ball in your hand. Yeah. You're the one that sets the tone for the whole game. And I think probably my mental game is probably my strongest suit.
Okay. How did you develop that mental game? Was it playing at Oklahoma State?
That was part of it.
Okay.
And I think going through really tough times there. And I think that's why, I mean, we went against the Big 12 had a lot of top 10, top 25 teams. So it wasn't a cakewalk anywhere. And I think not being very good, when I actually got my pitches back, I mean, if I could make it through, and I mean, I wasn't good, I struggled, but I could at least, you know, make it through a game. We might not have won. But once I got my pitches back and I could actually hit a spot that I was trying to hit, which was, you know, few and far between my first 2 years, I was just basically determined, and not like nothing really wavered me.
Okay, good point about not winning the game. How did you overcome losses?
I called my dad. Okay. I did call my dad after every game, and I think growing up, it's extremely important. We were never focused on the outcome, and you know, my dad. Like my brother ended up playing baseball. He was a very good baseball player. Yeah. He was only concerned about like the game, and you know, you're going to win some, you're going to lose some. I was extremely competitive. I don't think he needed to fuel my competitive fire. Just by nature, I'm extremely competitive. But when I lost, I would dissect it. Okay, well, here's what happened. And that was part of my problem, was I would just overthink. But I never got discouraged. I always was like, okay, well, I'm going to go do better tomorrow. And so anytime, and honestly, you learn a lot from losses. I mean, I would call and be like, yep, absolutely got lit, like completely just, and I would go through pitch by pitch and I'm like, here's what I'm going to do differently tomorrow.
All right. So you studied to a detriment, but you studied your some would call them failures, right? But you learned from that. You made sure you learned from that. You took the steps, the extra steps even.
Yeah, for sure.
To develop and evolve that.
Cause yeah.
I'm just kind of fascinated in terms of, you know, how somebody can go from being horribly bad.
For my standards, horribly bad.
To then making the Olympic team. And then my assumption is that, you know, when you're in the Olympic trials, that the margin for error is minuscule. So when you mentioned, you know, the different ladies, girls,
yep.
You know, if they were a little bit off, that was the difference in who made it. That's my assumption.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's also a huge, reputation is a huge thing, okay. Right? Like, so you have a sprinter who's extremely well known. They come out and have a bad trial. If that's not literally the end of the trial, like coaches know. I was fortunate. I performed all right at the Olympic trials. But I feel like if I had a bad game, I wasn't completely devastated.
Okay.
Because I had had enough success in areas, and I the coaches know. I mean, they don't ask you to try out for an Olympic team and they don't know anything about you.
Yeah.
I mean, they knew more about me than I knew about myself. And so I was in a fortunate position to know that, okay, I'm just going to go out, I'm just going to do my thing, and I knew I would be okay.
Okay. So you make the Olympic team.
Yeah.
How did that feel?
Awesome.
How did it feel to be able to perform in front of, you know, basically millions globally, right?
Yeah.
Because there's only a few. It's only a very small percentage of us humans that get a chance to do that, right?
And for sure.
You were one of those people. How does it feel to be on that such a large stage?
You know, it's an interesting question, and I say this all the time to Dave. As time goes on, and I was lucky to, I think that's why I appreciate my experience to go back as a mother of three and being completely kind of removed. When you're in your sport, I didn't think about it that much. Like my pitcher's mound was 43 feet, whether I was playing, you know, before the Olympics, we went to the Czech Republic and did a little tour there. Whether there was like one person in the stand and it was literally, you know, raining and horrible, and the mound was 43 feet. Well, when we got to the Olympics, I really just kept it inside. Like, the game didn't change. And so when I think back to it, I don't have these grand, you know, the opening ceremonies were amazing, but I really tried to keep it a game. Because if you make it bigger than what it is, all of a sudden you're doing something that you've never done before. I only know how to play the game the way I've always played the game, and I don't always play at the Olympics. So I really did try and keep it very simple. I tell Dave this all the time. We just recently moved, and I got, you know, some of my Olympic bags out. And as I look, I look at that now through a different perspective. At the time, it was like, you know, I would pitch, I would do what I could. I didn't look here. Like, I was here, straight ahead. I didn't look around. I didn't, you know, I always find my parents before games. I give them a wave. And other than that, I mean, I never let it sink in. Like, this is so important. All I would just turn around and go, okay, we're 1-1 right now. Let's go.
Okay.
So it was pretty narrow vision.
So you made one Olympic team. Why did you make two?
Probably the same answer why I made number one.
Did you remain competitive and involved in the sport?
Oh, yeah. I played through the whole time. Yeah. Sure. So, like, in probably not the best wording, but I was a mainstay on the team. I mean, every year I played.
All right. Gotcha.
Yeah. So, and it goes, the way it goes in softball is you have your Olympic year, then you have an off year, and then you have...
So you remain with the national team?
Yes. So I played every year since 2002, I was on the team through 2008. Yes. So there was, I mean, of course I had to go to camps and whatnot, but it was a different process at that point to make the 08 team.
All right. So what's the outlook for 2020?
So that did cross my mind, totally crossed my mind when I played. That's a really far time away for me right now.
Okay.
I recently spoke to our coach, and I'm not going to play this year based on what we have going on right here. However, the door is still open for 2018. So it's very big year in 2018. It's the Olympic qualifier. So I haven't closed the door, but we'll see.
What do you attribute your longevity to? Because you're 35, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I don't know.
So honestly, this is what we tell people in the gym. I mean, it's just, I just took care of myself. That was really what it was. I know I wouldn't be in a position, I would not have gotten a phone call if he knew I wasn't taking care of myself. Okay. We had touched base along the way. I'm still in contact with some of the players, and He knew I took care of myself. Did he know at all if I would be good at pitching or not? No, absolutely not. But he knew that I would at least have, he knew I'd give myself the opportunity. So really, I just, ever since the Olympics, we've never stopped working out, you know, whatever it is. And it just so happened that, you know, I've been lifting weights pretty hard.
Okay. So that's actually... It's a good place to actually take a break, and we're going to talk about lifting some weights.
Lifting some weights.
In the second half. So just give us a couple of minutes. We'll be right back. Hey, everyone. Just a short break for a few quick PSAs. A, sign up for our newsletter. Why do you want to do that? A, you get a quick early heads up on our interviews and blog posts. But more importantly, you can score some free, awesome gear from our partners, Wild Nation and Rogue Fitness. B, make sure to leave us feedback, either on iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube, wherever you're watching or listening. We can't improve if you don't give us feedback. C, if you can't wait till the next episode on Monday and you need that daily fix of Uncharted Performance, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Uncharted Performance and on Twitter at Reach Uncharted. And last but not least, if you want to score some free swag from Uncharted Performance, like this awesome tee that I'm wearing right now, if you're listening on iTunes or Stitcher, you probably can't see it, but it's... lift today like it was your last, Marcus Aurelius, famous quote. Head over to our Patreon community and check us out there as well. Thank you guys for checking out this episode and enjoy the second half. See ya. All right, let's do this again.
Bam.
My arm is hurting. All right, we're here with the most dominant softball pitcher over time.
Yeah.
I just said it out loud so we could just get that kind of out of the way. Because, like you mentioned, I think actually brought it up, but it might have gotten lost. You were one of the hardest throwers, if not the hardest thrower.
At one point, I was definitely known as a very hard thrower.
Okay. Yes. And you are, as we've mentioned, or if you see, you're watching the video of the interview, you're not large in stature.
No, I'm a peanut.
Yeah. So during a break, and you know, I'm still trying to figure out why you were able to throw so hard. How fast were you able to throw? What was your fastest?
71 was my fastest.
Okay. Gotcha. So why do you think you were so dominant? How did you get there? Why did you throw so fast?
So one of my philosophies, and for all those young pitchers, because I know you're listening to this right now, basically in anything you do, just you go 100%. And that's kind of how I took everything. Like I said, I bombed down the ski slopes too. Yeah. Like I just did everything 100%. And I think what happens sometimes is, one, you do need, like, people can say you can practice all you want. You do need ability, and you need to have like a genetic ability to be good. You could, you know, there's a lot of people out there that put in their 10,000 hours and they're going to have a ceiling. So I was lucky that I had a genetic kind of capability. But at the same time, I also threw as hard as I could from when I was really young.
Can you just tell everyone what you did to that poor girl?
Oh, I hit a girl in the jaw when I wasn't even 16, actually. I was, I think, 14 or 15, and I broke her jaw. I heard she had to eat through a straw for a long time. I was bawling my eyes out because I'm a 14 or 15-year-old girl. And what's funny is she froze. I threw it right at her head. Like I said, I wasn't very good with my location early, and it went right to her head and hit her right in the jaw. I threw so many pitches over the backstop. I mean, umpires despised me when I was pitching. I just refused to let up any time to try and place the ball or give it location. I was taught that you can always learn location, but you can't relearn mechanics every time you try and throw a little bit harder. You're going to be off a little bit. So my whole philosophy was, I'm going to throw as hard as I can every single time I'm out for every single pitch. I mean, I had pitches going behind people. I was not a person that you would like to see on the mound if you're a batter, because quite frankly, you had no idea where it was going, which was good for me, because people were kind of like, yeah, totally. And there were some that went right down the pipe that you could see they were jumping back. Yeah. So I really do think that helped, because I never developed any bad habits mechanic wise, because I wasn't concerned about where it went. I wasn't concerned about the end product. I truly believed, and I don't know why actually, I don't know why I believed that was the way to do it, and that my, you know, if you saw me for a game and one day you're like, that girl could throw, you know, strikes, you would be like, there's no way. Like, coaches were like, you need to take her out. Like, she's going to hurt somebody, which I did. But I did. I just threw as hard as I could. And eventually, my strike zone became to be relatively close to the real strike zone.
So how did Lauren the Terror develop those mechanics? How did you narrow that strike zone down?
Just practice. So like I said, I never had a true pitching coach. Mm-hmm. It was just a lot by feel. And like I said, I was fortunate. I have a natural ability. That's something that was clear that I was good at. Mm-hmm. And so I just kept practicing. My dad built this thing in the basement. We lived in a small house, but in the basement in our laundry room, he put wood, he made it into a frame, and then he put up a blanket. So it deadened it. And I, not from very far, from maybe 5 feet away, I would just be down there throwing and throwing and throwing and throwing as hard as I could, because I wasn't far enough away that I wasn't going to break anything in the house. I just did reps. Like, I loved to throw. And, you know, my dad always said to me, one of his greatest accomplishments in me loving a sport is he never had to ask me to go practice. So I did. I put in the time. But the time that I did was always very intense and hard.
Okay. When you were pitching or playing competitively, be it at college, pro, for the Canadian team, what, in terms of, I guess, percentage, what part did strength and conditioning versus sports-specific training take part? How big was basically the strength training in your development as an Olympic pitcher?
I think it's really important. There's a lot of lifts that are, you know, kind of you know, their speed and then their strength. And there's a lot of speed strength lifts, like a power clean, all like those type of Olympic lifts. And I think those are great because, as our regular strength, like you want to be strong. I know in college for me, I hit a point where I probably was a little bit bigger and it did affect my mechanics, mainly just because I think I blew up really fast. And, I tried to think about too much of what I was doing. But right now, I mean, over the last year, this is a perfect example. I did not train at all for softball, quote unquote, sport specific. I did our track workouts here, which were very just a strength and conditioning based gym. And so I stayed strong enough. My legs were strong. We squat a lot here. You know, I did a lot of deadlifts. When you think about softball, I was actually very fortunate talking about training because we've recently gotten into like hip thrust and glute bridges. So when you look at me as a pitcher, I need to project my power forwards.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of posterior chain things, a lot of deadlifts that allowed me to all of a sudden throw hard again. I couldn't really maintain it because my stamina wasn't there, but I was able to still throw the ball pretty hard.
Was that, hey, let's program these in to develop that, or was...
No, that was just our program.
It was just the program, and then the way it translated on the field was a byproduct of the program.
Yeah, which is crazy because when I found out I was playing in March, I wasn't about to start changing up. I couldn't do anything differently. I wasn't going to start a whole new training program. I mean, I already had enough on my plate. And so basically what we do here, squats, dead, like the main lifts... Mm-hmm. I just did those a little bit more, more softball. When I say I squat, like maybe I didn't squat quite as deep, but I still squatted. I still did our hip thrust. I did everything the exact same. And lo and behold, I could still throw.
Okay. So we've high-fived a couple times, multiple times, but you're left-handed.
Yeah.
But your right arm is also very powerful. How do you maintain that balance? Because when you pitch, and also when you were pitching in the past,
yeah,
it's a lot of similar motion on the one side of the body.
Sure.
So, were you concerned back then in terms of maintaining balance?
No.
Or did you even think about it?
You know what? In college is a great example. A lot of dumbbell work. Okay. Very little bars. I mean, when we back squat.
So unilateral.
Yeah, totally. So if, you know, yeah, if I'm doing a bench, which I'm actually can remember being in our weight room, if my left arm's, you know, pushing up 35, so is my right. Whereas if I have a barbell, maybe my left's doing a little bit more of the work. But we did almost everything was exclusively barbell, dumbbell, except for maybe Olympic lifts and, you know, squats. But when it comes to arm work, it was very dumbbell heavy. And we do a ton of dumbbells. I mean, that's one thing that we have here and I love, and we tell people here, we do a ton of dumbbells just to make sure you do get that symmetry on the sides. Okay. But there comes a point where I know I'm a pitcher, I'm going to be more dominant on my left hand. Like nothing's going to erase 100 reps a day of me pitching. I can lift as much as I want. Nothing's going to change that, but I can do my best to make my right as strong as possible.
Okay. Looking back at your career and the strength training that you've done, what do you think is some of the exercises that you mentioned a couple already, but besides the deadlifts and the hip thrusts, maybe going back to your, you know, younger, in quotation marks, years, what are some of the exercises and workouts that you did in the gym that translated well onto the field?
So believe it or not, I'm trying to think like in high school, I mean, I just did everything a normal person would do. I wasn't necessarily going for softball.
Yeah.
In high school, I also played volleyball and basketball. And so I just quote unquote lifted and went to the gym to be strong.
So more general physical preparedness.
Yeah. And then to be honest, a lot of the stuff I did in college, we do here, and our strength coach was the one making it up. I wasn't left to my own devices. Like when you got, you know, when it was 6 a.m. and they were like, you have to be at the track, we would do our thing and then we'd go to the weight room. And a lot of it is super similar to what we do here. It's just classic strength and conditioning. And so I didn't really think that much of it. Cause you know, when you're in college and someone's telling you exactly what to do.
Yeah.
It never really occurred to me until we started doing our own program. And I'm like, oh yeah, we used to do that all the time in college. And then ironically, I got my Team Canada program and I laughed out loud because it's very similar stuff than to what we do here. But it's just a lot of the lifts that, you know, you've seen people do since 1980s, even before. And then a lot of speed lifts, like a lot of cleans. Okay. So you have your strength, which is just standing pure strength. Mm-hmm. Then you have speed and then you have speed strength. So a lot of weight, but you're using momentum like kettlebell swings or cleans, things like that. I think were helpful for me for sure.
How do you keep that arm fresh after all these years?
That's why it's fresh. I told my coach, so being a little peanut for pitching and being a power pitcher, like there's a lot of pitchers who look like me, but they probably have more movement and are a little bit more spinny. You don't see a lot of power pitchers that have my stature. But I also suffered a lot of injuries because of it. Like I had a lot of wear and tear. I had stress fractures. I was out. I had a wrist injury. I thought I was never going to be able to do anything again with my wrist. And so when my coach called and asked if I wanted to play, I just immediately, with every other excuse of why I probably shouldn't do it initially, I was like, you know, my body's finally healed. And his answer to me is, that's perfect. He's like, your arm's probably great. And to tell you the truth, like I was pleasantly surprised at how hard I could throw and how good my arm felt from giving it 8 years off.
So that's the best prehab and rehab, is just take a while off.
A long time. Yeah, for sure.
When you, similar question that we asked your husband, is if you can explain or use one word to describe your evolution as an Olympic athlete, what would that one word be?
Evolution,
or just your Olympic journey.
In what way? Like what? Give me like a specific. Like, are you talking about?
If you look back at it now and you think of, you know, your horrible days at Oklahoma State, right? Or even your small town, you know, playing all the sports, but then kind of finding your way to softball, right? Through maybe high school and then college and then professional and Olympic.
Yeah.
If there is one word, what would that word be?
Honestly, when I look at it from a point of like internally, the word that comes to my mind is like tenacious. Like there was just nothing. Like I would stop at nothing. I would like run through a wall to do anything that I wanted to do. Okay. And so that's the first word that came to mind.
I think that might be the answer to my question from the first half is why you made the Olympic team in the first place.
It's like my uncle, when I made the team, and again, after all this time, I think he was just like, oh, the pit bull's back. Like I just, when I see something, I'm like, whoop, I'm going for it.
Have you ever tried pitching overhand?
Yeah, I'm not very good. I can throw way harder underhand.
Okay.
Oh, way harder.
Do you know why? I don't know why.
So no, I honestly just think for whatever reason, you know, some people are very gifted at certain things. The underhand pitch motion is just something my body naturally, for whatever reason, I'm naturally gifted at. Because I played outfield in college. Mm-hmm. So I played outfield, and I by no means had a hose from the outfield. Like, they weren't like, oh, they're scared of me if I'm going to. But if I got on the mound and I got to pitch underhand, they were like, oh, okay, she can throw a little bit harder. And I don't know why. I tried really hard to throw hard.
Well, we're going to keep digging probably. I'll try to figure it out after the interview. I'm going to follow up on this one. So we put Dave on the spot a little bit.
Right.
So I can't leave you off the hook. Can you describe your relationship with Dave?
Can I describe it?
Yeah, describe. Yeah, can you? Is it describable?
It's pretty describable.
Okay.
I know he has said this. We are very similar in certain ways. We're also very different in certain ways. And I think each of us brings something to our relationship. Like, he grounds me. I'm like the pit bull. Like, when I get on something, he's the one that'll rein me back in. We're very good at the whole balancing thing. Okay. And there are times where, you know, when we were leaving Chicago, you can't have two people a mess, right? He struggled leaving Chicago. I was like, I'm doing it. Like, we're doing it. We're going to get all the stuff. We're going to go. I think we read each other's cues very well. And whenever he needs something and he's lacking something, I can sense that and I can fill that void. I think that's something we do very good for each other. And then there are times where, you know, when we moved here, so a good example is he was a little upset to leave because that was the home he had made for so long. And we were leaving everything we knew. And I was just, I mean, I just put on my big girl pants and I'm like, this has to go. And I didn't really think about it because he was a little bit of an emotional mess.
All the things we find out about Dave.
Right? And I get it. He had been there for a lot longer than I had. It was the only job he'd ever known. I totally get it. But I understood I couldn't be a messy. I couldn't be a mess because he was a mess. And then once we moved, the roles reversed. And all of a sudden, I had no friends. I had nothing. I struggled a little bit. And he was the one that put on his big boy pants. And it was like, all right. Like, he was the one that was supporting the part that I needed. And I really think that we balance each other. Like, we do that, I think, really well for each other.
Awesome. Who's a better coach, you or
Dave? No, honestly, we both bring different things. I think we both have great things about us as coaches. I think anyone that walks in this door would be happy to know if either of us were there.
Okay. What have you learned from Dave?
I know he said patience for me. Patience for sure. From coaching or for life?
Both. Or either one.
All right. Well, I'm taking it more life. Okay. He's very good at going with it and figuring out, and he's very calm. Like, everything's going to be okay. I tend to get, you know, all in a bunch, and, you know, when I get stuck on something, I have a hard time just letting it go. And he's definitely taught me, and I rely on him a lot because sometimes I am like the pit bull, and when I do get stuck on something, I can't let it go. And, you know, he helps me kind of walk me off that ledge and understand, like, it's going to be okay. And that's one thing that after taking this huge leap of leaving Chicago, and everything's like, it's going to be okay. And he's really good at keeping the big perspective. And I'm really good at, like, my dad calls me a dog with a bone, just like holding on to things. So he's really taught me to just let go. Like, it's okay. What's going to be is going to be.
So I think the oxymoron of the day is that you're a Canadian pit bull.
That is so true. 100%.
Based on our conversations we had on camera. What is next for you? What is next for track? I know Dave kind of hinted at some things, but what's next for you?
With track, honestly, we love what we do. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're doing it. Every small business has trials and tribulations just because you're learning. I mean, there's no playbook. You can read everything you want. And we have a business plan, which has been rewritten X amount of times because things change as, you know, in theory, this sounded perfect, but that didn't work. So we're going to go to the next thing. And then we get these letters about people's lives changing and, not just physically, but emotionally. And it's worth it. And I think, as he had mentioned, like, we just want to do that for as many people as we can. There's a lot of different ways that we're going to be able to do that, and we're exploring them right now. But, you know, if we just had our one gym and only reached the only amount of people that were here just this minute, like, I don't think we would be happy. I think we really do have an opportunity to help some people, a lot of people out there.
All right. So just to remind everyone that's watched either just this one or both the interviews with Dave and yourself, where can people find track?
So we are located in Akron, Ohio, Fairlawn area, off Shiawassee.
Shiawassee,
lower level. It's kind of hard to find. So you got to go down a hill.
Yes, that's actually a very good point. If you pull into the parking lot, it's on the side.
It's on the side of the building, down the little hill.
Down the little hill to the side of the building.
Yes. And then you can follow us track_athletics on Instagram. Facebook, you can follow us. And then trackathletics.com.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Any parting thoughts? Is there one thing that you would want to stick in the listeners or audience's mind that would, you know, if they listen to the whole thing?
Gosh, that's probably the hardest question I've been asked.
We're gonna actually do something that we've never done before. Dave, you want to come up here real quick? We're keeping it fresh.
Yes.
we don't have a mic.
Get your hair good.
we don't have a mic, so you're gonna have to speak into that one. So if there's a one thing that you guys would want to share, because I didn't ask you this question, so if you can have me, you guys can roll with it together.
I'm disappointed since I walked out.
just speak into the mic.
One thing. What do you think?
I'm totally giving this one to you.
There's a couple things.
All right, so what are the couple one things? There's two of you, so take two.
Yes. Think big, right? Think bigger than you're used to. Explore other options. Your choices aren't always your choices, right?
That's it?
That's it.
All right, perfect. Wonderful. That's the first time we broke, I don't know what it's called in theater or film, when you break the...
You broke protocol?
Yeah, no. Protocol. There's a word for it.
Character?
Yeah, that's all good. Do you know what it is? All right,
the barrier?
Yes.
Okay, we broke the barrier.
All right. Lauren, thank you very much. Another high five. Dave, thank you again. The high five. Much better. You practiced.
He was jealous.
Yeah.
He was jealous of my high five.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Track, for hosting us today. We had a wonderful day.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for catching the show. Take care. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for checking out the video. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel and also check out our Patreon community by following the links right below me. Also, make sure to check out the related videos to my left, your right. You'll probably dig those as well. Thank you again and see you next time on Uncharted Performance. Take care.